We begin our show on a sad note. In tragic news this week, a U.S. citizen being held in Japan has died just days after returning home. 22-year-old Otto Warmbier was arrested by the North Korean government after allegedly stealing propaganda posters from his hotel during his stay to the country in 2016. The former University of Virginia student was arrested and sentenced to 15 years of hard labor. After nearly 18 months in North Korea, the U.S. made diplomatic efforts for Warmbier's release. According to doctors, he returned home from his time in the North Korea penal system with a coma and severe brain damage, and no prospect of improvement. Warmbier died this Monday, surrounded by his families and his friends. And this show was dedicated to him. Here's the truth, America. There is no quick fix solution to North Korea, but there must be a solution. Here is what we know. Kim Jong-un is on the verge of developing a nuclear weapon. Now, there is a silver lining in this gray cloud, and that silver lining is that over the past three decades, North Koreans have never been able to launch a missile past the Sea of Japan. That doesn't mean we as Americans and the global world shouldn't be concerned about North Korea. But the linchpin to maintaining or destroying this North Korean dictatorship is one country. The Democratic Republic of China. Because China is North Korea's number one trading partner, they are one of the few individuals that can truly put some hurt on North Korea that will allow them to change their behavior. Over and over again, we've seen U.S. presidents try to solve this North Korea problem to no avail. In 1993, President Clinton, during the Sunshine Policy, gave North Korea two light water reactors and barrels of oil, thinking that he could calm down Kim Jong-il's father, Kim Jong-un, from getting a weapon, and that didn't curtail them. Did it stop them? Absolutely, but it did not curtail them. President Obama tried some other diplomatic measures, and that didn't work. And so now President Trump is relying on China. Now, this is actually an area where me and the president agree. If we can convince China to put the hurt on North Korea, we could indeed take down this regime. We don't need war. We don't need warships in the Sea of Japan or the Yellow Sea. We don't need more American troops. We can beat North Korea on simple economics. If China would stop trading with North Korea, trust me, the government there would change. But it's going to be upon President Trump and his foreign policy team to push the Chinese closer to resolving the eyesore that has become North Korea. Now, America, I know that sounds very complicated. And I know to some of you say that's not possible. But here's where I think we have a possibility. Now that Donald Trump has pulled out of TPP, it gives us an opportunity to restart our relationship with the Asian Pacific Islands, right? And as part of that, it allows China to be a player. Remember, China wasn't part of the TPP talks. They were actually left out of the TPP talks. So this gives China incentive to engage to take down North Korea, and President Trump, rightfully so, is continuing to push the Chinese closer and closer and closer to eliminating the threat that is known as North Korea. Here's what I do believe. Now, what I do believe is that George Bush was actually right when he called it the axis of evil. I can't say for Iran and in Iraq, but it is true that North Korea is an axis of evil. That is not driven by reality, that's not driven by humanity, that's not driven by common sense. It's driven by a little child who's trying to get attention from the world that he never got from his father. And so he decides that he's going to launch nuclear weapons, he's going to celebrate and, you know, parade his missiles down the streets of Pyongyang, and he's going to, you know, make his people cheer for him or they'll be killed. This is a serious problem, America, and we've got to solve it, because if we don't, North Korea could destabilize the whole world. It's pretty simple if you think about it. If they can develop a weapon, which is the hard part, it's a hard simplicity, Fowler Nation, right? If they can develop a weapon that can make it past the Sea of Japan and to Tokyo or Osaka, we'd be in trouble. Because a nuclear weapon hitting the nation of Japan would instantaneously spark a global full-scale nuclear war. Because of the relationship we have with Japan, we would strike back immediately to North Korea. Upon our striking back, trust me, the Russians would strike us. And then you would have a nuclear catastrophe of epic proportion. We've got to prevent that. And the best way to do it is to slow down the money that's going to the North Koreans. It's not going to be U.S. sanctions. That's not going to fix anything. It's going to have to be sanctions from the Chinese, their number one trading partner. And maybe, if President Trump has some real balls, he'll put sanctions on companies that trade, the companies that have accounts in U.S. banks that trade with the North Koreans. We'll still have to see what happens here, but either way, what happened to Mr. Warm Bear should not happen to another American ever again.
Fight to win, stand up straight, no debate, push by hate, concentrate, penetrate, generate, motivate, live by faith, keep believing, I know the reason, it's the season, now's the time, keep on dreaming, keep on leading, and keep on fighting. I am fighting for the liberation. Voices with something to say, like many before me, for glory, you'll have to stand in harm's way. I'm no savior, just a soldier with an order. So I have no choice but to trust the God, cause it must be done.
Good night, America, and welcome to The Fowler Show. It's your boy, Richard Fowler. As always here on The Fowler Show, we're here to inform you, to empower you, and to help you get your voice back. Tonight's show is no different. Joining me in the co-pilot chair, Rich Webster.
Richard Fowler.
Tara Estee is having the night off.
Yep.
All right. We have all your favorite segments, News by the Numbers, Political Maniacs, The Richard Fowler Moment, The Policy Breakdown, and oh so much more. But right now, lovelies, yes, I'm talking about you. It's you, I, this blue vest and this blue tie that I've got on, and nothing but the numbers. There's no talking points. There's no talking heads. There's no smoking guns tonight. It's you and me, this blue Rich Webster, and the numbers. Rich, what's tonight's number?
Tonight's number, unfortunately, Richard, tonight there is a smoking gun because our number is 19. Our number is 19, the number of children that are killed or injured by guns every day in the United States. So, you know, with all the insanity that's going on with Donald Trump, it's very easy to forget that all of the problems that we had before him
still
continue to exist. So we have all the new problems from the Donald, and then you have all of the other baseline America problems that you hate to hear about. So, unfortunately, a new study coming out of the journal called Pediatrics found that an average of 1,297 children are killed by firearms every year in the United States. Okay, now mind you, an estimated 5,790 kids are treated for gun-related injuries each year. These statistics place guns as the second leading cause of injury-related deaths following car accidents for children ages 1 to 17. Now, if you're wondering what the rest of the world looks like, I can tell you that the United States is way worse than anywhere else. Richard, your take.
So here's my thoughts on this. Now, I'm going to be really real with y'all. Glasses off moment, right? I'm not anti-Second Amendment. I'm not anti-guns. My brother is a gun owner.
I don't think there's anything wrong with guns.
My cousins are gun owners. My problem is that we've got, there's a couple things that's got to happen here. Number one, right? I think we can all agree, and Wayne LaPierre 20 years ago, pull the tapes, has said this. Background checks, universal background checks. It's not about taking away somebody's right to have a gun. It's making sure that the right people have guns and the wrong people don't have guns.
Right.
Universal background checks, 3-day waiting periods, background checks on straw purchasers, and the getting rid of high capacity magazines. You do that, something wrong. Now, I know what the far right is gonna say, well, that doesn't solve the fact that kids get guns. I agree. So what you've got to do here is if you have a firearm in your house, I do believe that you should be forced to go. If you have a firearm in your house and you have a child in the public school system, you as a parent should be forced to go to a gun safety class where they tell you to lock your damn gun up so your kid doesn't get it.
No, you're totally
period.
Right. And I think we can draw two interesting parallels that, especially when you're talking about children. The first one, which ties into Richard's original point, is let's compare gun ownership to car ownership. Okay, so cars, believe it or not, are actually quite dangerous. We learned in the same statistic
They're
that
bullets.
The only thing more dangerous than guns are, in fact, cars. Now, it is significantly harder to get a driver's license than to acquire a gun in the United States of America. And let's be real, if we had some common sense, you know, barriers to entry for gun ownership, we'd be in a much better space. Now, Richard's second point, which is we were talking about, you know, gun safety classes for people with children, my take on this would be, now, there are other dangerous things in people's houses, right? When you have children.
You childproof your house.
Exactly. There's poison under the sink. There's poison in the medicine cabinet.
You, like, put the little things in the plug so the kids don't get electrocuted.
Exactly. You do all that stuff.
But you leave your gun out.
Why don't you have a gun locker? You sleep with a gun, like, next to your bed? You know, I mean, the fact that children are, like, shooting themselves and their siblings with their parents' guns is insane to me.
And I mean, I just think that, like, the arguments that the right continues to make about they're just trying to take away our guns, that argument holds no water to me.
Sure.
Right? Because when you have people like Joe Manchin from West Virginia, gun owner, A rating from the NRA, who when the Newtown parents would talk to him and like, we got a problem here, he's like, even I believe in background checks. Right? So it's not about trying to take away your guns or infringe upon your Second Amendment right. It's saying that every right in our Constitution comes to limit. The First Amendment, you have the freedom of speech, you cannot go into a theater and yell fire.
Right.
You should not be able to just have all these guns and your kids shoot themselves with it. That's problematic. And I mean, we talk about the president continues to moan and groan on about violent crime and crime in the community. If we got rid of, there was no illegal guns, trust me, the murder rate in places like Chicago and places like Milwaukee and places like Baltimore would drop like an anvil.
I mean, and I'll tell you this, and I think that, you know, it's a mistake for liberals and Democrats to have this argument and start with the assumption that Republicans actually think that, you know, guns are being taken away. The reason that the Republican voting bloc pushes this legislative agenda has to do with who funds their campaigns, and that's the NRA.
Thank you.
I mean, this is not a constituent issue. It's convenient that many of their constituents do like guns.
And don't get me started with the NRA, because I got some words for the NRA later on in the show, because I'm waiting for the NRA statement on Philando Castile, who is a gun-carrying African-American who was shot by the police for having a gun. But we'll get back to that. We're moving on to the next story. In the next story for you, on Tuesday, Republican Karen Handel defeated Democrat John Ossoff in the special election for Georgia's vacant seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. The race was deemed the most expensive race in the U.S. House history and was largely seen as a survey of the first months of the Donald Trump presidency. With the win, Republicans maintained control of the seat, which was vacated by Tom Price, the new Secretary of Health and Human Services. While the loss comes as a crushing emotional blow for Democrats, it does not completely doom their hopes to take back the Congress next year. To win in 2018, Democrats will have to find opportunities to do better, but still, you know, this is a high goal for them.
Yeah.
And let me just, but before okay, we go, go any ahead. Further, I just want to make one point to the Democratic Party. Party members, y'all are idiots. This, what happened to you guys was fake news, okay? Because you let the media and you let all these idiots tell you that the Georgia 6th election was gonna be the bellwether. It was gonna determine, this was gonna be a referendum on Donald Trump. Too bad none of you people who work for the party looked at the goddamn map. Because if you looked at the map, you would have known that that district is a 2-to-1 Republican district and has been in the hands of Republicans since 1979. This is Newt Gingrich's old congressional seat, people. We spent $12 million and we didn't get anything. We didn't even get a puppet. We didn't even get a stuffed animal. We didn't even get a mint. Okay, we spent $12 million. We did get a better Democratic performance overall, but we got nothing.
It's all about the W.
It is about the W. I just want to point it out, though. We spent $12 million. Now, what the real headline here, what we should have done is this. We should have downplayed expectations in the Georgia 6th. You know, after the primary, you should be like, ooh, it's going to be a tough race. When are they going to pull it off? Because the real story here is that Republicans spent $12 million to hold the seat. That's the real headline. Republicans spent $12 million to hold a seat that they have held since 1979. And in November, Tom Price won that seat by 30 points.
Yeah.
So Karen Handel won by 4 points. 6 months ago, Tom Price won by 30. The Republicans somehow managed to lose 30 points in this race. They lost 30% of their voters went somewhere. That is what's newsworthy about the Georgia 6th. But the Georgia 6th isn't alone, because you have the South Carolina 5th, where another Nick Mulvaney's old seat, a solid Republican DR plus 15 seat, Democrats got 4 points. Kansas 4th, same thing. People aren't reading the tea leaves right on this, Rich. These are what these voters are saying. They're not Democrats who are coming out in an overwhelming number. Independents are switching their vote to Democrats, and independents are saying, common sense people, not the Trump maniacs, common sense people are saying, listen, all of y'all in Washington are crazy. Y'all should be working together and trying to fix some real problems. Nobody really gives that much. Nobody really cares too much about this Russian election.
Yeah.
All this Russia stuff. Nobody really cares about all this. We want y'all to come together and fix problems.
Yep.
Right? We want you to come together and make sure that our public schools work. We want you to come together and make sure there's not a pothole on the 95. We want you to come together and create high-speed rail. Like, that is what the problem, what Democrats should be focused on. Instead of spending $12 million on this stupid race that we lost, we spent $12 million coming up with a message.
Yep.
Rich.
That's a break.
We're going to break.
Hello world, it's your boy, Richard. Every night when I get home, I find myself quite thirsty. Thirsty for an adult beverage. And that is why I prefer a tall glass of organic wine from the Organic Wine Company. Founded in 1972, the Organic Wine Company is the nation's oldest importer of organically produced wines. They have a tremendous selection, red, white, sparkling, and dessert wines, and it's oh so tasty. It's easy and inexpensive to ship right to your door. For a limited time, you can get an even bigger savings by visiting ecowines.com and using the coupon code FowlerShow. Join the movement. Movement of good-tasting, earth-friendly wine drinkers, led by the fine folks at the Organic Wine Company. You can find them online at ecowines.com or give them a call, 1-888-ecowines.com. And don't forget to use that coupon code, FowlerShow, for your extra special discount. This is our movement, and more importantly, this is our community. Do you feel like your community is being left behind? Has your elected official neglected their constituents? It's time to get your voice back. It's time for your community to rise up. We want you to take a picture of what's wrong in your community and send it to photo@fowlershow.com or tweet it to us at @fowlershow. We want to help you advocate for yourself. We want to help you get your voice back. Your pictures will be featured on our blog. We might even take your issue up on our show. We are committed to your community. Now it's time for you to be committed as well. Go ahead, send the picture to photo@fowlershow.com or tweet it to us at @fowlershow. Remember, it's time for you to get informed, empowered, and get your voice back. Our community, our movement. Only on The Richard Fowler Show.
I'm a third grade teacher.
I'm a school bus driver.
I am a parent.
I am a teacher's aide. And I agree to be identified
as a caring adult who pledges to help bullied students.
I will listen carefully to all students who seek my help
and act on their behalf
to put an immediate stop to bullying.
I will work with other caring adults to create a safe
learning environment for all the students in my school.
In my school.
In my school.
In my school.
I'm Dennis Van Roekel, president of the National Education Association. Help us create safe, bully-free learning environments for all students. One caring adult can make all the difference. Be that adult and take the pledge at nea.org/bullyfree. Adults have the power to stop bullying in our schools.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
Bully free. It starts with me.
Visit nea.org/bullyfree. A message from the National Education Association.
My name is Joe Thompson. I'm 29 years old and I have a career that I love as a systems analyst. Career. It still sounds cool to say that word. I never could have gotten on this path without a college degree. And if the college me were here, he'd tell you,
I never would have gotten to college without big brothers, big sisters. I could have ended up anywhere, on the streets even. But college? Joe Thompson? Not likely. My big brother helped me out. He taught me I could do anything, at a time when a lot of people were saying just the opposite.
And to a 7-year-old, that means a lot. My big brother's name is Phil. And Phil is the reason that this 7-year-old grows up to be a systems analyst.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child. And that can last a lifetime. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
The Richard Fowler Show is completely and totally interactive, so go ahead, give us a call, 202-573-8737, or tweet us at Fowler Show. Remember, this movement is nothing without you, so pick up that phone.
We're back on the Fowler Show, and it's time for your political maniacs.
I am your steward into political maniacs this week. My name is Rich Webster. I produce the Richard Fowler Show.
If you never knew him, now you know him.
If you didn't know, now you do. Am I right?
If you don't know, now you know. Sing it.
Sing
you
it.
You know very well.
All right, you keep doing the backup vocals. It's time for Political Maniacs. It is the only secret we keep from Richard here on the show. We detail the craziest moments that happened this week in politics with the backup vocals. And tonight, I've got your first maniac. Make sure to tweet us at Fowler Show with the name of the maniac you want to win.
Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. Sorry, it's all my head.
This week's political, I mean, that was good. I mean, we could just do that from now on. You just do a cappella vocal stylings while I talk about politics. Anyway, all right, political maniac number one, the shade. All right, so our first political maniac is a combo maniac because I think we could go in two directions. I'm going to let Richard dictate the conversation.
There's two directions going on here.
We could go in two ways. Okay, so your two choices for people are in the same story. Since President Donald Trump first took office, the number of on-camera White House press briefings has strangely declined, Richard. What's even stranger is senior Trump aide Steve Bannon's explanation for it. In a recent story in The Atlantic, reporter Rosie Gray reached out to several members of the Trump administration to ask why the administration was holding fewer and fewer on-camera briefings. Okay, now here is what's really funny. White House chief strategist Steve Bannon replied to this query in the following manner. In a text message, he said, "Sean got fatter," and did not respond to a follow-up. So his explanation for why there are less on-camera briefings is because Sean Spicy Spicer has gotten fatter since
being
in office.
Can I just say that, like, Steve Bannon reminds me of, like, you know, some of us, most of us live in a family, you have that, like, sort of creepy old uncle who just says things that's off the wall. And your mom always says
he looks like a homeless person.
I was trying to pile up trash. Can I finish my story?
Tell me about your family.
No, not my family. I think everybody's family has it. Like your mom's like, oh, that's uncle. You know, when you're growing up, oh, that's uncle so and so.
Just Steve.
Yeah, Uncle Steve. Just don't pay him any attention. He just sort of says things.
Yeah.
And but, that's what like that's Steve Bannon. The sad part is America is the crazy
country.
Uncle who your mom tells you to ignore is running the country. Okay, that's the scary part.
So, Richard, we can take this this political maniac down two roads. We can take it to Steve Bannon Town, or we can take it to Spicy Town. What's your take?
I'll permute the two activities.
What does that mean?
Permute?
Yeah.
Bring them together.
You're gonna combine them.
Okay. You never heard of the word permute? Like a permutation?
Yeah, I've heard permutation, but I didn't know you could do
a permute. To bring together.
You talk. I'm going to Google this. Yeah, it's a word. Submit to process of alteration, rearrangement, or permutation.
To permute?
So you know, it's not really combining, I guess.
No, it is to, it's to arrange all possible ways. Permute.
So you want to talk about both, is what you're saying.
America. Didn't I just say that?
All right. Sean Spicy Spicer is on the chopping block. The word on the street right now is that Mr. Spice himself, the Spice Meister, could be headed out the door in the near future. Now, if this is the case, he would be the shortest acting press secretary in the White House
history. I have a couple of good sources.
Okay, please detail your good sources.
And I find it, I think he's around for the at least for the next year or so.
You think he lasts a year? Yeah.
So I know a couple of folks who are up for the job, who were up for the job, and none of them are taking the job.
So you think the reason that he's sticking around is because they can't fill it?
Yeah, because I don't think anybody wants his job.
But he doesn't want it.
Well, then he should quit.
Well, what happens if he quits?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. 90%...
I would quit if I was him.
I know. Well,
he'll get a job somewhere else at this
point. I can say this, that, I mean, I'm blessed and privileged in my life that I know a couple of White House press secretaries, personally.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing about the White... Well, one, only four of them have existed in this Twitter, Facebook era.
Mm-hmm.
And of the four of them that exist in this Twitter, Facebook era, only one of them... And I've actually met Sean Spicer a couple times. Only one of them has to deal with a president that's so insistent on tweeting. And so basically, the job of the press secretary, if anybody's watched the West, I mean, CJ Craig in the West Wing, I mean, like, she's not the perfect press secretary, and clearly it's a drama, but it was based off of Dee Dee Myers from the Clinton administration. And Dee Dee Myers actually consulted on the creation of the show. But the job of the press secretary, they're the second most visible person at the White House.
Right.
And their job is to sort of stay ahead, right? To stay ahead and clean up. It's a hard job because you have to stay ahead and you have to clean up the mess that was left behind. Sean Spicer or Sarah Huckabee Sanders, whoever has that job, sometimes they're at the brief, like they're sitting at the podium and
a reporter tells them what the president just said.
Tweeted. And so they can't stay ahead because the president is three steps ahead of them. So he and himself, by his insistent tweeting, is making this job impossible.
Right.
Because I don't think the press, like I think some members of the press, maybe some would argue, they're asking these really hard questions and they're being unfair to Sean. But a lot of members of the press, and the job of the press is to ask tough questions, are asking like, so should we take his tweets seriously? Yesterday you said that his tweets were official statements. Today, it's not. And the truth of the matter is according to the Federal Records Act, everything the president writes and or speaks becomes part of United States history. It's archived. Every tweet that he tweets is thus archived by the Federal Records Act, thus meaning every tweet that the president tweets is an official statement from the United States government, period.
Yeah.
So when
including
he said,
all the amazing things.
Including all the cyberbullying.
Cyberbullying, promoting crying. His daughter's fashion line while in office.
All of that.
All that is part of the thing.
I mean, I think Sean Spicer has a very tough job, and I mean, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, like, you got to give the guy credit. Like, he does not have an easy job.
No, and
like,
I mean,
it's literally, like, you're attempting to do the impossible every single
time. It really is, and I mean, he tried his best.
It's pretty amazing. Like, it's actually so surreal that, like...
Oh, yeah, and I think the president, and I actually think, like, I think him and the president, I don't know, but you could just, I feel as though they might have a very tense relationship.
So that's my impression on this. And you said you think he would last a year. Yeah. I think he doesn't make it till year's end.
But I don't think they're going to...
I think it's equally likely to be a firing or him quitting.
But I think it's going to be Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the number two,
yeah,
who's doing half the briefings now.
Sure. But I don't think he makes it. I think that Donald Trump is going to get to a point soon where he starts thinking that he can do the you're fired routine and things will get better.
I mean, my thought on that is this, because I think
over the course
one
of
thing
years,
you have to give one thing you have to give Donald Trump is he is a marketing genius. And I mean, yeah, all these doomsday predictions,
like, why do I keep talking about him? Because he's good at it.
Yeah, I mean, all these doomsday predictions that Democrats have made have been wrong. Now, the one doomsday prediction we didn't talk about in the show yet, but we're going to talk about for what's left of the segment.
No, it's over.
Oh, well, in that case, we'll be back after this break.
So, Véronique, thank you all for joining us today. So tell me, what is the Organic Wine Company?
The Organic Wine Company is something I founded out of the depths of my heart some 30 years ago, if you can believe it, because of my passion for the earth, my passion for my terroir, the land of my ancestors.
Now tell me, how is organic wine made differently than regular wine?
Generally speaking, an organic wine has to be made with grapes that are grown organically. An organic tomato is a tomato that's grown without pesticides, herbicides, or any kind of chemical fertilizers and such. And so grapes grown organically are grown that way as well, without those chemicals. Conventional wines, on the other hand, may be grown with all sorts of pesticides and herbicides and other chemical adjuvants. And then once in the cellar, may be made with all sorts of other chemicals. I'm excited to be following in the footsteps of Tom Hartmann and doing something before it's too late, giving people a wonderful wine to celebrate with, to celebrate their life and their friends and our planet in a way that is completely sort of congruent. Then I have wines that represent that code of honor in a bottle. You can call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. And look for us at www.theorganicwinecompany.com. Better even, you should call me, Véronique, and talk to me and get to know those wines personally. And we carry about 100 by now, a whole range of from Merlot to Cabernets to Chardonnays to all sorts of things from different countries and also from California.
Breast health awareness is critical for all women, particularly African Americans, because we have an increased risk of dying from breast cancer compared to women of other backgrounds. At U of M, I'm doing research here and with women in Ghana to look for an inherited link that makes African and African American women susceptible to a more aggressive type of cancer. Finding this link, I believe, will make new treatments possible. But right now, making sure that you are properly screened is our best protection.
With experts like Dr. Lisa Newman, the University of Michigan Health System is a leader in cancer care. When you call our free Cancer Answer line at 800-865-1125, an oncology nurse will answer any questions you might have about the prevention, screening, and treatment of breast cancer and other forms of cancer. All calls are confidential. Call 800-865-1125 or visit uofmhealth.org/cancer-answer-line.
We're working to help everyone enjoy longer, healthier lives.
That's the Michigan difference.
Say you want to go to college.
Yay!
A Big Ten college.
Yeah!
But you don't want to feel like part of the, well, you know. Is there an answer for you? Of course. Indiana University East.
Go Rebels!
Indiana University East. You'll get the quality of a Big Ten education in a small college setting. IU East offers more than 50 fields of study, from accounting to political science, taught by internationally recognized faculty with an average of 18 students per class. So it's not student number 95A-6273, please report to... It's more like, hey, John, welcome to class. Best of all, you'll graduate with one of the most respected degrees anywhere, a degree from IU. Don't wait. Go to iue.edu... or call 800-959-EAST to arrange a visit to Indiana University East. IU. Focused on you.
The Richard Fowler Show is completely and totally interactive, so go ahead, give us a call, 202-573-8737, or tweet us at Fowler Show. Remember, this movement is nothing without you, so pick up that phone.
And we're back on the Fowler Show. How are you, Rich Webster?
I'm well.
Good. So the National Bureau of Economic Research, who they produce a lot of epic papers, and I mean, for the wonks out there in the world, you should check them out. But in this new particular, in their latest one, they sound the alarm. In the Bureau's latest report, economists begin to look at the relationship between school health conditions and student discipline. Researchers found casual evidence linking young children with high exposures to lead in their bloodstream with an increased probability of getting suspended from school and being placed in juvenile detention. While economists are yet to settle on the definitive explanation for why lead has these different effects on children, they strongly advise the government to take a look into the report's findings. And we do as well. Now, we've covered lead before on the Fowler Show, and lead and school conditions are like two of the issues that really get to me.
Yeah.
Because I've worked in cases of both. I mean, folks who know and know well, I spent a year in Detroit working with the teachers and paraprofessionals and educators and community there around their deplorable school conditions. I've also done some work in Newark around their lead conditions. And this is just one of those ones where this is what I like to call willful government neglect. It is criminal what the government, what local, state, and federal governments are doing to these individuals. And the only reason why it's happening to them, Rich, is because they're poor, right? This is like insult to injury of poverty.
Oh yeah, I mean, you would think that in a scenario where, you know, people are less well off, the government would do more to make sure that they're brought up to the level. But in fact, they're like, how can we screw these people over more?
Absolutely.
And the connection between lead and, you know, all of these negative effects in school, talking about suspensions and lower test scores. I mean, this is not like, you know, a situation where correlation does not equal causation. This report is saying that
correlation is causation.
There is causation, and directly the lead exposure is leading to these things. This report is not saying that, you know, poor people are more likely to be exposed to lead and poor people also have these things and they're not related.
I mean,
this is a direct connection between the two things.
I think you're right. I think that's a direct connection because majority of the people, well, 99% of people that end up with lead poisoning in the current times are people who happen to be poor.
Right.
Right. And I mean, I think you take a look at Flint, Michigan, which I've been there. I've met some of those people. And it is disheartening to me that a government would willingly poison its people to save, you know, 10 cents a day.
I mean, that's the most insane thing when you talk about
willing. Like, it's willful neglect. And I think you're seeing it. And I mean, I'll never forget the moment that I walked into a Detroit public school last year. And I was like, I cannot believe people learn in these conditions.
Right.
It is 10 degrees outside, and this classroom is 10 degrees. And on the other side of the building, it is 115 degrees. Right? Jeez. So there's extremes. There's no, like, 75 degrees.
Right.
The boiler doesn't work. There's bullet holes in the walls. Then you say to yourself, we want, or the mantra you hear from a lot of these government officials who are engaging in this type of behavior is, well, you need to pull yourself up by the bootstraps and America will give you opportunity. And, you know, how the hell do you expect someone to pull themselves up by the bootstraps when the boots don't have soles and you haven't got any goddamn laces?
Or straps.
Or straps.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally insane. I think the Flint, Michigan example is the most telling. And listen, folks, there's a reason that lead-based paint isn't used anymore. It's been shown to be detrimental to humans, and there are a lot of side effects. And I'm not surprised at all that now we're seeing that these children that have been exposed to lead are having negative side effects, you know, cognitively and behaviorally, right? I mean, this is like a new level of lead poisoning where we're having to go back to the drawing board and start looking again at what have we done now, right?
Well, and I think that's part of it, right? And I think that's part of it, and I think part of it has to be a national focus on making sure that the communities, no matter if it's a rich community or a poor community, no matter the zip code, no matter the race of people who live there, no matter their citizenship status, that everybody is given the playing field is leveled for everyone, so that we can all have a shot at achieving the American dream. And sadly, what we're seeing from this administration, when you got the department, the Environmental Protection Agency, just gut it. Just simply say, oh, we're just gonna scoop all of it out, right? And we're just not gonna, minus the climate change crap, right? but they're all related. Okay, well, stay with me and I'll bless you, right? But the people who enforce lead, the people who test water, when you get rid of all those departments, you get rid of all those people, you cut the budget, what do you think happens? Flint, Michigan happens. East Chicago, Indiana happens.
Right.
They found lead in the water in DC public schools. They found lead in the water in Newark public schools. These are hurting our children. And that's what blows me, because they like to make this argument over and over and over again about, oh, we're putting all this debt on our children, and our children have to pay off all this debt. Well, you're poisoning them too.
Yeah, okay, I mean, you're when they can't them. Pass classes because their brains don't work correctly.
When they're drinking lead.
How are they going to pay off your debt? Now, I mean, not to mention, I think this is a perfect example. You hear the same argument all the time from Republicans that there's no money for this stuff, right? They're like, listen.
There's money. You know, don't lie.
When you go to the 1,000-mile-up view on the budget and where the money gets funneled, there's you money. Find that education is really left out of the picture. I mean, in terms of national spending, education is
shoom,
tiny, tiny.
And it's only going to get worse under our girl, good old Betsy DeVos.
Yeah, I mean, I think her agenda for the coming years is, you know, less money for after school programs.
And privatized to hell.
And, you know, let's be real, privatization is not actually a good solution.
No, privatization doesn't work. And beyond that, but you have to ask yourself these, like, the hard questions, right? So Donald Trump, like, all these people are like, they're like, oh, then because you have this, oh, well, they all turn into criminals. Here's how they, you got to follow the story here on this one. So take a place. If this report is indeed true, Rich, and I believe it to be true, I'm not an economist or a scientist, right? So you put a child in kindergarten, his whole life he's been drinking water from his tap. Mm-hmm. That water is poisoned with lead. We know that lead poisoning leads to suspension and expulsion. I was recently in Dale City, California, and a teacher told me a story that will stay with me for the rest of my life. It was so impactful when she said, you would not imagine how I reacted when I saw a 5-year-old kindergartner getting put in handcuffs by the police and being called a perpetrator. Right. And that's how you get there, right? So the kids are unruly, the classes, the school's out of control because all these kids have been drinking lead from 0 to 5. They get to the school, they're out of control. Instead of the school having restorative justice practices, instead of them trying to figure out how we got here, instead of sort of putting their arms around these children, they end up putting they're putting these kids' arms on their backs and bringing the police in. So the police officer comes in, the police officer arrests them the first time from their classmates. This creates a pattern.
Yeah.
Because how do you think his classmates respond to the fact that he's been arrested? This student, that memory of his first encounter with the police as him being arrested and put in handcuffs at 5 years old will stay with him for the rest of his life, and it will dictate how he interacts with the police moving forward. So first he gets arrested by the police, he comes back to school, then he's suspended again. Suspension, expulsion. That turns into nobody cares about me, nobody loves me, the education system has done me wrong, so now I'm gonna turn to somebody who does love me. That's gangs, right? That's shoplifting. So now he's part of the penal system.
Right.
And before you know it, we are creating factories of prisoners, not educators, not teachers, not public schools, but the laws, the regulations, the mindset that we have.
Right. I mean, I think your example is really telling, because if you compare how that specific instance was treated, I mean, there's just a cultural shift in these schools that are being left behind, and you know, let's just talk about like a well-funded public school in a good white neighborhood somewhere, right? The way that the children are treated
are
when it comes to discipline is totally different. And when you show a child that, you know, you did something wrong, and you know, you teach them a lesson out of it, and you don't put them in handcuffs, it's a totally different experience for the entire classroom, right? You say, oh, Billy did this wrong. He's going into timeout or whatever. He's gonna learn something from it, and then he can come back in.
And I think I benefited, and I always thank my mom a lot, because I benefit from going to a school. I went to a predominantly white middle school and an inner city high school. I went to a magnet program. Mm-hmm. And you can see the difference, not only in resources. I'll never forget, because when I went to school, the apples, you know, the big apples that were colored?
Like, yeah.
our middle school had so many apples, it was unbelievable. Like, they were just lining the walls. Like, we would have, like, classes.
Apple store.
Yeah, like, we'd have a class of 35 would go to the library, and we would all have an Apple computer.
Yeah.
That was in middle school. When I got to high school in the inner city, same district, no Apple computers to be found.
Yeah.
I was like, where'd the Apple computers go?
Anyway, we're coming for the break, folks. We'll keep covering the story.
Now, all I know is what I read on the internet. Today's headline, pot legal in 14 states for pain. Now, that takes a smoke break to a whole new level. Now, some companies might see this as a problem, and some, well, they might consider it as an incentive program, depending on the state. As far as I can see, and I'm concerned, it might become a state of confusion. Now, I see a few businesses that might have a problem with this new style of pain management. Restaurants, for one. The munchies, you know. They might be eaten out of house and home. Definitely eaten to their bottom line. Corporations, well, they might have a problem in meetings with uncontrollable laughing fits. Of course, the entertainment business will be fine, but for them it will be business as usual. I don't know about you folks, but I can think of a few jobs I would not want folks smoking marijuana for pain. My doctor, for one. Unless his name is Dr. Feelgood, and I'd like to know that ahead of time. The police. I don't want anyone getting that shoot first, ask questions thing later in their mind. Whatever happened to aspirin? Now, we might just allow some people to smoke out, like Michael Steele. Matter of fact, we might just fund the whole party. No pun intended. For them, it might calm them down a little. After all, what's the worst thing that could happen? They smoke, eat, laugh, and go to sleep. Now that sounds like the Congress if you ask me. Then again, who knows, you might be working with someone right now that's high. I mean, sometimes folks have accused me of being on something. Rest assured, folks, I'm just on a roll. All right, go to my website, willrogersusa.com.
Stop taking your politics so seriously. Listen to humorist Will Roberts Saturday night, 6 to 7 p.m. on WEAC Radio 1480 AM.
Hello, world. It's your boy, Richard Fowler. Every Friday after I've wrapped up the Richard Fowler Show, I find myself quite thirsty. Thirsty for an adult beverage. Not just any old adult beverage. I prefer a tall glass of one of my favorite fine wines. But not just any old wine either. I obviously demand wine that is super tasty. But I also require the wine I drink be good for the earth and kind to my body. That is why I only buy my wine from The Organic Wine Company. Founded in 1980, The Organic Wine Company is the nation's oldest importer of organic wines. They have a tremendous selection, reds, whites, sparkling, dessert wines, and it's easy and inexpensive to ship them all directly to your front door. Join the movement. The movement of health-conscious, earth-friendly wine drinkers, led by the fine folks at The Organic Wine Company. You can find them online at ecowine.com or give them a call at 1-888-ECO-WINE and tell them your boy Richard Fowler sent you.
I'm Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico. Last year, my state became the 12th state to allow medical use of marijuana by patients who are seriously ill. Some people were surprised that a Republican governor supports medical marijuana, but I'm hardly alone. Groups like the American College of Physicians, American Nurses Association, and American Public Health Association have all acknowledged the medical value of marijuana. New research about medical marijuana is coming out almost every day, showing remarkable potential in all sorts of serious conditions, including cancer, AIDS, and chronic pain. But some in government still want to put politics and ideology ahead of public health. To learn more about medical marijuana and what you can do to help, contact the Marijuana Policy Project at 1-877-JOIN-MPP or visit them on the web at mpp.org. Thanks.
We're back!
We're back. Let's keep it light on this segment for all of our potentially millennial viewers or those who are going to be ushering themselves into the, you know, middle-aged folk.
I am not middle-aged.
What is the 30s? What is that age group?
We're young.
Young? Just young? When does middle-age start? 40?
40, 45.
What is 30?
30 is like you're not in
your
20s.
Yeah, I'm having a great time. You're just having a good time.
No, I think your 20s are when the good times end.
And then 30 is just
I'm still having a good time. I'm just growing in places I shouldn't be growing in.
So we are talking about what happens. All the awful things that happen when you turn 30. So Richard, you're over the threshold, right?
I am 4 months over the we are on the 6th month, right?
It's June, yeah.
So I am 6 months into 30.
Yep. I'm 27, so I have 3 more years before my life turns terrible.
That's not terrible.
No, I don't care. Anyway, this website has thoughtfully compiled a list of all the terrible things that will happen to you when you turn 30. And we're going to talk about it. Richard will share his own personal experiences, and it's going to be great. Number one, your weight. That is right. It's harder to shift when you're out of your 20s. That's because your metabolism begins to slow. For women, pregnancy might play a part too. Stress can also cause weight gain as a reactionary release of hormones can encourage fat storage increases, says nutritionist Jane Mickle. The National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey found the average person puts on 1 to 2 pounds per year from their youth up until their mid-30s.
That's about right.
That's right. So, Richard, tell me about the 30s. What happens when...
So, all right, I was one of those people, and Rich knows this because the show's around for 5 years.
I've known him pre-30.
But, like, if you actually look at all of the show's tapes, like when we first got on YouTube, like, you would see that...
Look at that.
Like, my weight would yo-yo. Like, there'd be some weeks on the show where I'm like... And there'll be other weeks in the show where I'm like a pencil. And it's because I would be able to drop weight. I would do this thing called the 11-day challenge.
Tell America about the 11-day challenge.
So the 11-day challenge is it's pretty much starvation.
Don't eat for 11 days.
Well, it's not that bad. I mean, I can still do it now. It's something about how your body works, but it works. I mean, I can still do it now. I just don't lose as much weight as I used to. I don't want to do the 11-day challenge and lose 20 pounds in 11 days.
And then you just gain it right back, right?
No, because you can keep it off for a couple months. If you maintain it, like you can maintain it. I maintained it for like 6 or 7 months, and then I went back to eating horribly again. And here's the thing, and Rich tell you this, where the thing that adds to it a lot is stress. And most people who know me and follow the show know that like not the stress is not really my problem. My problem is my sleep pattern, and so because my sleep pattern's off, my eating pattern is off. Mm. And so, therefore, if you notice me, my thighs and my ass are just the size of, they're just so big.
Size of tree trunks, folks.
They're not tree trunks.
That's why we only shoot from this.
I don't think it's that bad. People love my body.
The entire bottom of the screen is just Richard's thighs.
The other part of the neck goes, what does it say about sex drive? I'm curious what it says about sex drive.
Sex drive. Okay. Actually, researchers say that women between the ages of 27 to 45 are hornier. They fantasize more, it seems, and have more sex in general in their early 20s right up through menopause. But while a higher sex drive might be a good thing, the reason is due to declining fertility. So fertility is running out for women. Now for men, testosterone levels decrease after 30, which can mean a decrease in libido. It happens at a rate of about 1% per year. By 70, that decrease can approach 50%, according to Livestrong.
If that's true. I'm 30, and I mean,
it says it only decreases 1% per year.
I think my sex drive is higher now than it was before I was 30.
Wow. Perhaps so you're an anomaly.
I might be an anomaly.
Well, there are other things going on. Your hormones are getting all out of whack because your body is settling into, you know, a steady routine. Once you're 30, your body is officially giving up on growing and your brain is fully developed, but hormones will change your body. They have an impact on things like body fat, hair loss, mood swings, and erectile dysfunction.
Well, I don't have erectile dysfunction.
You got that going for you.
And my hair is balding in the front.
Well, more about hair. If you don't go bald, you might start to go gray at 30,
Richard. I have no grays.
It's a common time for the hair to start to turn. All right? So, for some people, it's not just the grayness that can be worrying in their 30s, but hair loss is also a problem. A lot of men, you'll find that by the time they're 30, You're getting it.
Yeah, it's coming in. You don't have hair, but hair loss is usually a genetic trait.
Yeah.
And your dad has a full head of hair.
My dad has a full head of hair.
But it's your mom, it's supposed to be your mom's father.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm all right now. It's not, you know, I think it's fine.
Is your mom's father bald?
He has hair loss, but I have cousins that are also on that side that have way more hair loss going on than me. So I'm hoping whatever is going on with my dad's side is diluting the pool a little bit.
Oh, well, but he hasn't said, when did it sit in for them?
they one of them is my age and the other one's a couple years older.
So you might be a couple years away from all that head of hair going away.
You can always just keep your hair long, so it seems like.
But that's what I do. I mean, that's the trick that I do. I try to keep my hair very long in places where it's balding. See? Like for black, this is a lot of hair. Mm. And I just trimmed it. But Rich has seen my hair longer. Rich has seen my hair has been rather very long.
Are you describing an afro? Because I definitely haven't seen that.
You've seen my hair in an afro. Like, well, I usually get not to cut the sides, but you've seen like the top, like really long.
The super fro.
Meanwhile,
back at the ranch. So basically, everyone's hoping. I mean, here's the thing: like, you know, if Richard or I are ever gonna go bald or start to lose hair, we can always pray that by the time that happens,
there's a technology.
Surgery sounds bad. I feel like by the time we get there, there's gonna be some great hair loss stuff on the market that's gonna take us to a new level. You know, maybe they just say, okay, where do you want hair, and then they just point a laser there, and it's like, okay, we're good.
Yeah, because I just need
reestablished your hairline.
Laser right here.
I mean,
right there.
I don't know. I think there are techniques, and you know, you really hate to have to start like applying. Like, what's this pill? The pill that you can take that makes your hair not fall out.
Propecia.
Rogaine.
But Rogaine is like the mix.
Is the mix.
Or you begin to like, for me, you comb your hair.
Or you can just get the DJT, the Donald Trump wave.
No, you comb your hair differently. So like what I like to do is after I comb it, I sort of like, you know, move some down.
You just shift some.
Yeah, you just like, gotta shift a little bit down.
Do a little this number right here.
And here's the thing, at home, you probably don't even notice that I'm balding.
I mean, I wouldn't consider Richard to be balding. I mean, I don't know. Like when you look at someone who's like really balding, you're like, oof. You're like, yeah,
like they're trying to hold on to it.
Like, you know, you either have like the crown is also really rough too, because like you might not even. So I feel like some people aren't even aware of how bad their crown bald spot is.
Yeah, no, I know.
You can't see the crown.
Because here's the thing, my crown is growing in. Because if you notice,
yeah, you're not
like because my hair on the sides here and here, pretty long, and then here, not so much.
Well, you could always just get it cut to match where there's less growth, right?
No, what we do, well, me and my barber have a technique, but that's for another day and another segment, another time. We'll bring D Sharp on the show.
Yeah, and Richard's barber will give you all of Richard's hair loss secrets and how he corrects them.
All my styling secrets.
Anyway, folks, this has
all
been a great segment.
All my styling secrets,
we
baby.
Need to keep it light sometimes because there's a lot of darkness going on.
Here's the thing about old. There's nothing wrong with a good old fine wine. Nice aged fine wine. That's better.
Oh, I see. An elderly person, you're saying.
Yeah, it's better than some vodka.
There you have it, folks. Boom. We'll be right back.